true, that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions he asking. You find them inside you, recite you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting the passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
Now stop sharing with me. I don't want to see it anymore.
Okay. That's what she said.
Did she?
Yeah. Hi.
Hey, Katie Rubin.
What's up?
We just spent the last 15 minutes down troubleshooting sound again. We often do, and it's part of our life. It's just part of our life. And Katie remembered that she lives with a literal sound engineer, a human who is a professional musician and sound recordist.
That's true. I had callbacks today.
I want to hear about it. You said you started on Saturday with the auditions or Friday?
Friday.
And you loved it and it was really fun.
It was very fun. casting is hard, it turns out.
I know it is. It's emotionally takes its toll.
Yeah. After a while, too, what starts happening is I'm like, I can't hear anything anymore.
Right.
You're all just saying the same words over and over.
Yeah. But then when that's happening,
yeah,
when something does pop out, it's fucking remarkable.
Yeah, exactly.
And you go, oh, that's what I'm looking for. The reason I wasn't hearing it is because nobody was giving it to me. That's what she said.
It's also interesting. Exactly. It's also interesting because you start out like, you know, people, right? Like, you know, actors. I know, let's say I know 3 of the 5 people I'm seeing or 6 of the 10 people I'm seeing. And you have an idea. You're like, well, clearly it's likely to be Jenny who's going to do this thing and John who will do that thing. And then for whatever reason on that day, Jenny, who is built to do that thing, just doesn't
do it.
And then Shaniqua shows up out of nowhere, nailing it. You're like, who the fuck is this? And where did she come from?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we had a bunch of that, which, and then I made a video today. Today was my 3-card spread day. One of them, I do one on Monday and I do one on Friday. I was like, and I've also been making a video a day until our GoFundMe is met.
Mm-hmm.
So we're at, by the way, listeners, we're at $8,000 out of our 20. Very proud of that. So we need whatever the math is.
12,000 more.
Thank you. Great. And so I've been making a video a day just to be like, hi, I'm making a video every day. And we need this GoFundMe and here's some wisdom or here's something funny or here's whatever. The video of the day topic was like, if you're listening and you're an actor, please remember it, like in the room, it just works or it doesn't. It has nothing to do with, are you a good actor? Unless it does.
Right.
But then I was adding, if you've ever booked anything ever, it's not about you. It's not about you in the way you're thinking it's about you.
Yeah.
Ever. It's about like, this just works, or this works with the people we already cast, or you're just not right for it. And you're not bad. You've done nothing wrong. You acted your ass off. It's just, your face looks weird with the guy we cast, or he's too tall, or I don't know, there's 600 things, or like.
Sounds like just relationships.
I know, right?
Yeah. I mean, often. I mean, you can also misbehave and be a shitty human and right, be bad at relationship. You can also show up in the room and suck. But most of the time, you're just in a relationship and you're like, this isn't working and nobody did anything wrong. Same thing in the casting room. It's like, you did fine. I did an audition today. It was a callback for roles that I would never have called myself in for.
Huh.
So I was like, well, all right, I'll just do it.
Yeah.
And I did it, but because I have nothing, like, and no shade on the company, I just decided that if this happened, it's because it was supposed to.
Yeah.
And that's the magic. And I am not grasping for this at all.
Yeah.
Not reaching for it. And as a result, I didn't really prepare that much. I just kind of was like, yeah, okay, I know these words. I'm going to go and stand in the room and be like, is this the guy you're trying to say these words?
Right. That's the thing.
Because that's it. That's ultimately, you know, of course, I put some thought into the meaning and like put a little bit of juice on some things and made some fun choices.
Yeah.
But for the most part, you just got to go in and be like, am I the guy that says the words in the way you're wanting them to be said? And, you know, please give me an adjustment to try and get me closer.
That's it.
But after one or two adjustments, if they're not getting there, they're not getting there.
That's it. That's it. That's all it is. And it's Man, it really helps to depersonalize things the more you direct or cast things. Just like, man, you are not a bad actor. You're just the thing or you're not the thing.
Yeah.
And that's not personal.
No.
Oh, my God. Anyway, there was also like, I mean, we had everything, the gamut, man. Like people where you're like, who told you you were an actor? People like off the street. To be fair, there was one person like that, but so crazy. Like, I promise if you're listening to this podcast, you're not that person. Because this person was so out to lunch, it was unreal with that. But then we had, you know, people who are a little green and then people who are super not green and really seasoned. And then people who are solid as hell, but just like not at all right for this thing. We had everything. We had everything. I have two totally different casts of 3 out of 4 people.
So like if it's this person, then it's got to be this person and this person. But if it's this person,
yes,
then it's got to be this person and this person.
Correct. Yep. And the fourth person, guess which role it is?
Mine.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Move your dates.
But I need it to be a brown person.
Yeah.
A brownish person or any non-white person.
Yeah. Yeah. Good call. That's all right.
So you're out anyway.
Not the first time I've heard that, Mr. Brown.
Yeah. So, oh, by the way, Fontana told me, she must have said this to you directly, that you two now have to have an improv duo team because of the name she came up with.
What was it?
Brown Butter.
I don't think she told me this.
Oh, my God.
No, but you're right. Brown Butter.
Genius.
We're going to all, and we will sell like coffee cake at each show. Isn't that what you make? Use brown butter to make things like coffee cake, I feel like.
Sure. Brown butter, though, you should have. Oh, no, sorry. You should. That's too many carbs at dinner. I'm having a carb crash. You should have a brown person, though, in the team.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
If you're called Brown Butter and you're two white people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there is that. Yeah.
So never mind.
It's fine. Who's got time?
For listeners, Fontana's last name is Butterfield. Cassie's last name is Brown. So if they had an improv duo, they'd be Brown Butter.
Yep.
Field. Brown Butterfield.
And Reuben and Shaw.
Reuben and Shaw. She was saying too, you know, if I joined you guys, the law offices of Brown, Reuben, Butterfield, and Shaw still kind of works.
Brown. I think it's Brown, Butterfield, Reuben, and Shaw. That's the order.
That works.
Yeah. It's got a better flow to it.
Yeah.
I told you about the lawyer when we settled Rami's mom's estate. The lawyer that we hired,
no,
really lovely guy. His name was Margolin, Seth Margolin, I think was his name. Great lawyer.
Okay.
Very helpful. Great guy. But someone recommended him and we contacted him directly. And then we went to meet him and we were sitting in the waiting room of his law offices. And, you know, offices are, as we've discovered, are often named after two people, right? Or three people. And we look up and I just go, Rami, look. And the you know, the big letters on the wall above the receptionist says the law offices of Margolin and Biatch.
No.
I swear to God, dude's name was Biatch.
No.
B-I-A-T-C-H. Like, I don't know what else it's going to be. So I could have not.
Beach, maybe?
It's Beach, apparently. It was explained to us later.
There's no way that's real.
But it's Biatch was his
no name. Way that happened in reality.
That happened.
I'm shocked.
Yeah. He was probably a lovely lawyer. No shade on him. Definitely no shade. Not committing any slander on a lawyer right here and now. But
oh, man.
That's what I read.
Unbelievable.
That's his name. So you think you have most of it cast, but you're still looking for the fourth role. That's not bad at all. You can absolutely go for some more targeted casting to get a third, to get one person.
Yeah.
That's how that works.
Yeah, I'm just going to have to be. Fontana sent me a few people. Well, I'll probably text you later and be like, you have any ideas? You know, I'm just going to ask everyone and just talk around and just get a bunch of texts and then set a date for like just the dudes and probably just on Zoom.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I think you can do it. Absolutely.
Yeah, it'll be fine. Yeah. So anyway, that's been very fun and also like really leaning into, I'm a good director.
It's nice to know that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had two different actors say, wow, you're an actor's director. And I'm like, yeah,
because I'm an actor. And I'm a director.
But they were like,
I feel the same way.
Yeah. They were like, you know how to talk to us. And I'm like, yeah.
I would love to be directed by you, Katie. What a fun idea. Let's do it in the future.
It'd be fun. Let's do it. Next one.
I have a beach behind me. You know why?
Because you're a biatch.
Because the law offices of Margot and biatch.
Yeah.
No, here on my Zoom background.
Oh, shit. I accidentally just let the person in.
All right. Well, he's coming in. I'm going to Costa Rica on Friday.
What?
Yeah. I am headed to Costa Rica for the very first time ever. You can unmute yourself and come on in. We're already just talking. Come on in.
Talking smack. Smack talking.
Yeah, we're just talking. We're just talking. You're muted. Hey. Oh, he's got a good mic too. Love it.
Yes, I'm waiting for a cord. I got to get things hooked up better, but I will.
Do you want to do a cord and chill for a sec and we'll just keep talking? Or are you good?
Sure. Yeah, you guys keep talking. I'll be right there.
You got it.
All right, Brian. Anyway, going to Costa Rica.
What for?
Old friend of ours. An old friend of ours,
yeah,
who I guess has gone to this place, this particular, like, I don't know what it is, like a lodge out in the middle of nowhere. You take a car and a ferry and a boat to get there, and takes a, you know, 2 days of travel, although it's only a few hours just to get there. And it sounds awesome. Like, has gone and like taken different people each time, and like reached out to Rami first and was like, hey, you guys want to come with me this year? And then they reached out to me and were like, you should come. And like, she made all the arrangements, our friend did.
Wow.
Which is the best, meaning all I had to do is get a plane ticket that landed around the same time as theirs, you know, and just, they're all flying from the East Coast, so they'll be on the same plane. And then I'm flying in and meeting them and getting in a car with Rami and our friend and her two kids and driving and staying in a beautiful resort in Costa Rica. It's going to be raining the whole time, but like 85 degree raining, which I love. Warm rain is the best.
Man, that's going to be amazing. Costa Rica is on my list. It's like literally the next place I want to go. So you got to send me pics.
Yeah, I will. Although I don't know if I'll have service, but I'll have some Wi-Fi at certain times, so it'll work out. But I will share when we get there. Super excited. Are you sending me messages or is someone else sending me messages?
It's not me.
No, it's someone else. Because I saw you looking down and I was like, wait, what's going on?
No, it's that I'm getting slight emergency texts and I'm trying to not look at them and I'm failing. So I'm just turning it off now.
All right. Family stuff.
No, there was some of that earlier. Now it's like, if this doesn't happen by this time, then this can happen with regard to like space and rentals and rehearsals. It's okay. It'll be fine.
That's all right. Producer problems.
It's like the kind of thing where it can wait till 9 p.m. I would feel more comfortable if it didn't. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's just, anyway. So yeah.
Anyway.
Back in.
Brian, whenever you're ready to pop back in, you just unmute yourself and jump back in. We're just yammering. Go on.
Well, I'm just making note of Brian's look here on his pic here on Zoom versus his IMDb is like, well, damn.
So you're saying he should change to his IMDb picture for his Zoom profile pic. It's a better pic.
Yes. That is my preference personally.
It's a hotter pic.
I mean, I'm looking at, there's so many pics on here. This is a hot man.
Yeah, I agree. We're objectifying you. I don't know if you can hear us right now, but it is happening.
Yeah, you're hot. Tone it down.
Take it down a peg.
I'm trying to focus on the podcast and you're up there being hot. What am I supposed to
do? Being all hot and stuff.
This dude has done a lot of shit. I'm sorry I didn't research you more, Brian. Squid Game, rom-com gone wrong. Pokemon, Earth Defense Force, Iron Rain, video game, The King's Affection TV series, Kingdom TV series, fucking Squid Game.
Well, yeah, he did the English dub for one of the characters in Squid Game. I was reading. This is Brian Kim McCormick we're talking about here.
Yeah,
this is our guest today. Y'all can look him up on the IMDb.
Who's also like here but not here.
I know. Where did he go? We lost him. He went looking for a cord.
Yeah,
it's sad. It was really nice to have him.
Well, this has been fun. Bye, Brian.
We're throwing you back. So I'm going on this trip and I'm excited.
Yeah.
Which means I'm also like wearing a mask everywhere I go right now because I don't want to get sick right before I go to friggin', you know, Costa Rica and stuff.
Yeah.
So just being a little overcautious, and that's fine.
That's smart. And you had some sex.
I did. I had some sex.
I'm so happy for you.
It had been a little while. We'd been having trouble. Not like relationship trouble, just literal calendar trouble.
Yeah.
Our calendars were not in agreement for quite a while, and we got to get together and enjoy
ourselves. Well, I mean, I've had this fucking partner with COVID, so I have no, I got nothing. We're just, today he tested negative. So we're like,
yes.
What time is the podcast over? When's the penis going inside the vagina?
And then I got to take care of this one emergency text, and then.
Yeah, and then boning.
Pound town. You prefer pound town or bone town?
I like Bone Town.
Bone Zone.
Ooh, Bone Zone. How have I not used that before?
You must have. You're going to the Bone Zone, which is a neighborhood in Pound Town.
There you go. It's a village in Pound Town. When you get lost in Pound Town, you hope you wake up in Bone Zone.
Yeah.
In the Bone Zone.
Right.
Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to it. It's been a while. It's also like I said to him yesterday, I was like, I hate to say this. Because I hate to be this person, but it really is nice that we've been apart for a while. Like, absence does indeed make the vagina go...
Get hotter?
Yes.
Get warmer?
That.
Brian, what happened to you? We lost you. Did we scare you off with our talk about Pound Town and warm vaginas?
Where'd you go, Brian? There he is.
Oh, now he's muted.
Can't hear
you. We can't hear you. There's no words.
I'm going to go back to the...
No, you're back.
Mic.
We're good. We're good. We got you.
Yes. Something's not working with mine, but we'll just pretend I don't have this. And
okay. You sound good.
Thank good. That's what matters, right?
Yeah. You sound pretty good.
Good. All right.
All right. Did you hear us objectifying you, or do we need to do it again?
I think you have to do it again.
Okay.
Do you want us to?
Say yes.
Yes.
Great. That was not pressure at all.
I was looking at your IMDb and then the picture of you on Zoom. And I'm like, this is a hot human being on IMDb. And then there's this Zoom pic where you look like the dad version of you.
Oh, yeah, my whole career has been dad. So
is that right?
Yeah, I've been playing old men probably since I was 24. So
is that right?
Yeah, I first major role I had was playing Mulan's father. So I think they aged him around 60 years old. So.
Huh.
Wow.
Yeah. I guess just one of those faces.
Yeah.
Wait, what? Okay. So
yes.
Hold on.
Oh, I think this is working again.
Oh.
Continue. No, you continue. I'm just going to try something.
We spent the first 20 minutes of today's episode pounding our head against Katie's tech problem. So.
Is this bad? Is this working?
It's.
Yes.
Okay.
I think it is. I don't know. Oh, yeah. That's definitely. Oh, my God.
Great.
Also has a really sexy voice.
Here's the most important question of the evening.
Yes.
When you do it, do you go to Pound Town or to the Bone Zone?
Pound Town.
Hey, okay.
Pound Town is your preferred place to be.
Pound Town. Yeah.
That's fair.
Great.
And is that a wedding ring?
No, this is just...
wrong hand.
I don't know. Apparently I bought this. That too. I bought this and then recently found it after like 4 years. And I was like, oh yeah, I must have bought this for some reason, so I started wearing it again.
Question on this point, unrelated to anything at all.
Yes.
So we had callbacks for this show I'm going to direct today.
Oh.
And I was telling Cassidy about it before. A man came to auditions Friday. I called him back.
Uh-huh.
He came back today. He had a wedding ring and a wedding ring on the other hand, same finger, same ring.
Oh.
Same ring. It was like...
He was just making sure.
He's double married?
He could be in a...
Maybe he's part of a thruple.
Maybe he's thrupled.
There you go. Yes.
Maybe. I just thought like...
Just making sure doubly not available.
Exactly. I was like, focus on the acting. Focus on the acting. I'm just staring at his fucking rings. Like, oh my God. Okay, Brian, you're an actor.
We just threw you in the deep end. It's good to be here.
Thank you.
That's Katie. I'm Cassidy.
I'm happy to be here.
Do you know anything about our podcast?
Only a very brief summary that was sent to me in email, but it's fascinating. So I'm excited.
So you live in LA.
I do.
You know Sophia very little.
Very little. I met her at a mixer for Equity Actors in LA.
Uh-huh.
And then I geeked out because she knew similar people that I knew. We have a really dear friend in common, Christiana Clark. And I was like, oh, if Christiana likes you, then I know I'm going to like you. So
that's cool.
We went out, we had coffee, we talked the art stuff. We have very similar views. We're, I think we're after similar things in our careers right now. And when I did a little digging again, she was the original Diane in the world premiere of Aubergine by Julia Cho at Berkeley Rep. Mm. And that is a dear, dear show. Like the fact that she is the original, it was just like destiny, kismet, whatever. It was very cool to meet her. So, and then she brought me to this. So I trust and I'm jumping in and yeah.
Okay. So we're actors, we're improvisers.
Right.
Comedians, we do the things you do. And I'm an energy healer and I read the Akashic Records and I have all these clients and teach these classes. I'm a little fucking tired today. That's, you're getting tired, Katie, is what you're getting. So what we do on the podcast is when we have a guest is I'll ask you like your relation. What does the word spirituality mean to you? I'll ask you in a moment and we'll talk about that. And then we'll talk maybe about how creativity connects to it, if it does for you at all or not. And then sometimes what we do is we get into the visitor's Akashic records. So I would take you into your records and answer any questions you have or do energy healing or whatever you want. We also don't have to do that. But that's the basic shape of us and what this is.
Love it.
Cassidy and I shit talk for about half an hour. And then the person comes on and then we get deep. And then, but still talking, a lot of farts, a lot of sex.
Tried and true format.
Yeah, you get it.
Yeah.
So you're obviously an actor. So to me, whenever I meet actors, I'm like, okay, more than likely sensitive and open to a certain degree. Or that, or just a crazy narcissist, but you don't seem like that guy. So.
Which would you cast yourself as right now?
Right. The open guy.
Okay, good.
So given that, like, if I say the word spirituality to you, like, what does that mean to you? Do you have some? Is that a thing for you? Is it relevant in your life at all?
Yeah, I feel very connected to energy. And to me, spirituality is what the energy that connects all of us in that giant universal tapestry. So
nice. And then how do you relate to it? Or what role does it play in your day-to-day life?
Ooh, I know for me, it really comes from nature. And so if I do not have nature in my life, I can tell that my balance is off and then I'm craving the outdoor space.
Totally get that. And then when you go to the outdoor space, like what does it give you? What does it do for you?
Calm, reflection, rejuvenation, you know, all the buzzwords that I think, but like truthfully that, like yeah. I was not always somebody who loved nature. It really took the pandemic to slow my life down and the hustle down. And that's when I realized, like, because I was basically hiking in the state parks of Minnesota for 3 to 4 hours a day. And I was like, oh, this is,
wow,
I need to leave New York and move to LA. Like, that's basically how my journey happened.
Wow. Tell us more.
Yeah. Okay.
Were you in New York?
I moved to New York in 2020 and I left. I officially moved out July 2020.
So you just moved there and then immediately went to Minnesota.
Or I'm sorry. I'm sorry. 2010. Wow. Time.
Okay.
Oh.
Now the story makes a lot more sense.
You're tired. I'm slightly high. It's all good.
Perfect.
Right? It's a California show. I moved to New York in 2010. Then in 2020, March, when everything hit, I was in Minnesota doing a show, which is where I'm from.
Oh.
So I had a feeling that the pandemic was going to be worse than what we were predicting, mainly because when I was in New York, I had jobs with the Standard Hotel and the Standard International. So I had a lot of connections internationally within hospitality. And as early as like November, they were canceling major events and just like everything was shutting down. So I was like, oh, this is a little bigger than the flu. So when we were predicting 2 weeks and theater shut down and whatnot, I was like, I think it's gonna be longer. I think both coasts are gonna shut down. And ultimately, when the cities start back up, where do I wanna be? And I knew it was LA. I needed the sunshine, the water, the nature, the openness, the mountains. And I talked to a few friends who lived in New York and I explained my pitch. They all agreed. We were all kind of on the cusp of moving to LA. And so we just kind of did it. And then I got here October 2020.
Okay. And how's it? And does it feel sort of like that was all meant to be? Or does it feel like you're on a weird...
Completely meant to be. Absolutely. I remember maybe like the third day I was here driving, I don't know, an errand or something during that COVID times, as many errands as we could do. But I just remember the sunshine, the wind, the trees, and being like, I feel more at home in 3 days here than I ever did living a decade in New York.
That's nice.
So yeah, I'm definitely a West Coast kid.
What do you think was
from the Midwest?
Right. What do you think was keeping you in the East Coast in that case?
The hustle and the myopic view of being focused on Broadway.
Okay.
I think I've been close to that place many times. And I think, you know, you feel like you have to be there to be a part of it. Obviously, the pandemic has opened up a lot of more remote things. So that's been nice. Like, I still have a very active New York audition experience because of remote opportunities. But I was really, you know, it was the people that were keeping me there, but and the facade of potential work. But I think ultimately I had stopped being, I always was like, I'm happy, but am I optimally happy? And I knew I wasn't optimally happy and I needed to change something because I was feeling that a lot of my life, but also a lot of New York, is spent in small spaces by yourself and kind of depressing. And we spend so much money for that. And it's like,
yeah, why?
Yeah, I actually spend a significant amount less on living expenses here. And, you know, you'd never think that.
Right.
It's technically cheaper for me to be here in LA and I'm happier. So I do definitely feel like I made the right decision.
That's awesome. And so, being raised in, you said Minnesota?
Yes.
As an Asian man, mm-hmm. How was that?
Well, I grew up in a white family because I'm adopted. And so I was very comfortable in Minnesota. In fact, I would say I didn't really understand what being Asian was until I was an actor. And that forced the industry was like, you're Asian, so you have to do this. And because early on in my career, I would try to audition for roles that were in white families. And then they would look at me and be like, you can't be in this. And I'd be like, but why?
But you're like, I was in a white family. I have a white family.
Exactly. And so that was a very weird awakening that happened. Because, you know, I think growing up, yes, I looked in the mirror and it was clear that I was not like the rest of my family. But the familiarity that you get about being a quote unquote white person is how I felt. Like, it, you know, I think all the white spaces I was in obviously pegged me as being different. But also, you know, I would say in the hierarchy of like minorities, Asians are the least threatening to white people usually. Right. So I think I was, you know, if anything, I was probably just not even noticeable.
I see.
I just kind of faded into space. So it was, you know, I had that, but I also understood the minority card and the diversity card in general. I wasn't an actor until I was later in my college life. But early on when it came to like academics or anything like that, and even applying for college, I understood that I could get more scholarship money by doing these stories of like, I'm from a white family and I'm Asian, pity me. Like,
right.
I feel bad saying that now out loud that I played the system, but you know, it was that, yeah, it's what I did.
I played the system left and right, and I'm white.
There you go.
I've needed to. I'm a woman. I'm Jewish. I mean, help. Yeah.
Exactly. So, but yeah, it was the arts that made me realize I was Asian. And I think the best like marker of my journey of that was kind of even with my stage name. Like, I started out as Brian McCormick, which is my legal name. And then when I joined Equity, there was already a Brian McCormick. So I knew I was going to have to change. And I switched it to Brian Kim, and which is my biological last name. And the problem was in New York, people didn't realize that Brian McCormick and Brian Kim were the same person. So they thought one was this Asian guy. The others thought it was this white guy with an Asian fetish because he kept showing up at all these Asian events because I'd be tagged in things or whatever. And it's like, so a friend talked to me and was like, you should marry all of it. You're a Brian Kim McCormick. Like, it's a representation of your whole journey. And like, the, you know, I was like, huh. And when I joined SAG-AFTRA, that's kind of when I was like, yes, this is the time to unite all three. Because also there, I think there was a Brian Kim and SAG-AFTRA. So I was like, I knew I was going to have to do another name change. So, yeah.
Okay. And so
that's kind of where I'm at now, is like, walking this world in space as an adoptee.
That makes sense. Are you mostly a stage actor? Do you do most, like, what are you up to these days? Like, is it?
I do all hats, like whatever they want to pay me. I started in theater. I moved to New York because I wanted to do musical theater. At some point, people thought I could do plays. And so I all of a sudden started doing more straight plays and whatnot, and then picked up film here and there. My friends in New York, we kind of got tired of waiting for things. So we started making films and just getting, and then I started exploring voiceover and whatnot. So I like just the industry. I think ultimately my final goal is to be a filmmaker and be on the other side of the camera.
Oh, cool.
And do more directing and producing and yeah, that type of stuff. So.
And so the reason your Facebook, your Zoom photo is looks like you're the dad version of you is.
Yes, is. I think it was just, wait, is it, I have to remember what it is.
You're wearing a blue shirt. You have a mustache.
Okay.
And you're kind of a little sideways to the camera.
Yes. Okay.
Glaring at us a little bit.
That, yeah, I get often cast as that, as like the opposite of what I am in real life. Because I do feel that I'm a little bit more jovial, a little bit whatever, whatever, happy-go-lucky guy. But I often play villains or dads or broken people with problems. And it's for whatever reason, I can tap into that type of gravitas that you see in that image. And some of it, especially when it comes to headshot photography, I will have to say I owe some of it to just watching episodes of like, what was that show? Top Model. Like watching those girls work with world-class photographers and really like listening to them and seeing how they get, it's like, it helped me at a younger age, even before I was an actor, to understand a relationship to a camera.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just fun.
But like, you're so young looking.
Oh, thank you.
I'm looking at your IMDb and you're like a little tiny child person. You're like a young, handsome gent.
Oh, thank you.
And then there's this dad. I'm actually just impressed at the breadth of, or like how, you know, your look, you can look so many different ages. It's kind of amazing. Anyway, cool. This is a very random question. I've never asked it. I feel like I haven't asked a question like this on this podcast ever, which we have, I don't know, 200 episodes? How many episodes of it?
Like 180 or something.
Yeah. I have an Asian male friend. I'm asking you this because I'm curious. I'm just curious if this applies to you, and it maybe doesn't at all. Another Asian male friend of mine talked about with me to great length his difficulty in high school. Like, he has had a long-term journey with white women because he talks about the sort of white female stereotypes about Asian men, and how I think I might be remembering this correctly. One of his parents was fully white and one was Asian, and he was like, I'm just a dude. And then he would try to date white girls because he's like a white guy in his own mind. And then white girls were just like, I'm sorry, what? Like, not having it. And then he learned in his teenage time about, like, I don't know, like stereotypes that white women have about Asian men, like,
yeah,
and how they just like won't give you the time of fucking day. And it was interesting to me to hear it because I was all trying to get in his pants for a long time. And finally, when I did, I was like, what? They said no? I'm confused because he was crazy hot. Anyway, did you run into that? Is that a thing for you as well?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I think something that Asian people, diaspora, whatever, for many years have been fighting against are the exoticism of our women and the,
like, demasculine
asexuality.
Yeah.
Yes, demasculinizing our male men. And, you know, and I think it's that thing where it's not necessarily outright. You're not like, it's not actually true.
Except for when it is, right?
Yeah, except for when it is. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
Like the amount of like small dick jokes that you hear from like young age all the way up, and like,
right,
you know, that shit, like, you know, again, because men in general are just bad at talking about their feelings and like how things affect them.
Yeah.
Like, so much rage and like, I think depression and just inadequate feelings of all this shit start at those early ages of like boys, quote unquote, being boys without actually understanding the consequence of what they're saying. Because they don't talk to each other about how that is absorbed. And we're starting to see a change in that now, you know, like men have emotions, I guess, and they're talking about them on podcasts and being more open about them in shows. And I think that
we try.
They try. They do.
We do.
So I think there's corrections of, you know, the stereotypes that have been planted at an early age. But I do think it's a big deal. Like, that's why when Crazy Rich Asians came out, it was such a big deal to have like a romantic Asian lead.
Right.
Because it's normally not the case.
Right.
Well, with any like stereotype that lands on you and sticks to you, you also internalize it. I mean, I'm generalizing all different stereotypes, but we tend to internalize it. And then even though we're saying it's not true, we've internalized it and then we're mad about it, but we're also fulfilling it by living into it a little bit by our own belief.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Did you ever have like crushes on white women and then just find out in a shitty way that they saw you differently?
I think the issue I ran into the most growing up was that I would often be the best friend.
Sure.
So that could be its own form of, you know,
right.
He's safe enough to confide all of our secrets and my deepest desires in, but he's
right.
But it's also because he's non-threatening and never, like, I was never the desire of a lot of people's affection.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And so even now, like, hearing you both, you know, so wonderfully objectify my picture, it's like...
You're welcome.
That's not something I hear a lot in my life.
Really?
So I just, you know, it's taking any compliment. Like, it's interesting when I'm... Like, one of the most pivotal roles I ever did in my career was the lead in a world premiere called The Korean Drama Addict's Guide to Losing Your Virginity by Mei Li Yang. And it's basically As You Like It, set against the backdrop of Minnesota and a Hmong woman and a Korean, like, a chaebol who's like an heir to a big company.
But what's that word, chaebol?
A chaebol, a chaebol.
What does that mean?
They're like an heir. He's like next in line to inherit like a Samsung or something.
Okay. Okay.
And the whole play is about, you know, he has this cool, cold Mr. Darcy-esque exterior and then, you know, melts away and they, you know, fall in love and all the things. But it garnered me a lot of this like leading sexy man energy following from the audience and whatnot. And it was so weird to hear it because that's, again, it just doesn't happen in my life ever.
God, that's so interesting.
And so as the character, it's easy to inhabit the character because, again, I've seen examples of that character my whole life. But as soon as I step off that stage, like the confidence, the feeling of sexy, whatever you want to call it, it goes away and I go back to being, you know, nice, warm, open, best friend, Brian.
Wow. Do you have again, I don't know why I'm going down this aisle with you, but
going deep on this one.
Here we go. But do you have are you a person who, I want to be careful with all these questions, like who wants, are you looking for the LTR marriage wife, or are you more, is that like not the goal? Like, what's the goal for you dating wise? What are you heading towards?
Me personally, not heading towards that.
Yeah.
I've always been more of a bachelor at heart.
Uh-huh.
But it's because I think I'm fulfilled emotionally with my friendships and my family. It's very much a crossover. And then on the sexual energy side of things, it's, you know, we live in a very accessible world now. So, you know, I think there's a lot more acceptance in the idea that we don't have to have traditional.
Right. It doesn't have to look that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say that if anything, I'm always open to anything, but really fight against labels of any sort.
Interesting. I don't know. I just love hearing about people's approach. I mean, all the questions I've asked you are sort of coming from that perspective. So then I was like, oh, let's ask him what his perspective is. Yeah. Like, what is the actual thing you're looking for? Yeah. I mean, I have this idea. I mean, this is not a new idea, but like, like coming back to spirituality, right? Because sort of what we
are supposed to generally talk about, but whatever.
Yeah, there's a way that I'm trying to formulate this idea, but there's a way that, like, in a way, the more you get connected to an energy like nature or an energy like, I would call it like spaciousness or consciousness or expansion, there is kind of a letting go that occurs around all the labels and all the boxes and whatever else, such that, like, I think, I don't know, for myself, I find myself, it works for me in a practical way at this moment anyway, to do the, like, the monogamous one person LTR thing. But that's because after so many years of work on myself and like destroying all the labels and the boundaries that were the ones that were illusory and the ones that were not true for me, it's like, this is what's working now rather than, but I feel even though I'm more in one than I've ever been in, like I'm so in one, I'm so in it. And even though I'm deeper in and more committed than I've ever been, I have a feeling of less give a fuck about any of it, like less marriage to the, less attachment to any structure of any kind being required than I've ever fucking had. Like,
Yeah.
It's just sort of, I don't know. So anyway, we were talking about nature before as being sort of a doorway for you or an access point to some kind of spiritual connection. And I just wonder what your thoughts are about the relationship between as you expand spiritually or deepen into your connection with nature. Like, how does that play out romantically? Like, what does that do to one's romantic? Were you always a person who was open-minded about the structure of things?
Yes. I mean, this might be too much detail to go into for a podcast, but I would say I saw Eyes Wide Shut when I was a young kid, like probably when it first came out.
Like too young? Like you were too young to see Eyes Wide Shut?
And too young to really see it, but also like, oh, wow, that's Eyes Wide Shut. Okay, Nicole Kidman.
Yeah.
But that was my revelation that there's a whole nother world out there that's not small town Minnesota. Like, you know?
Yeah.
There's people out there who are doing things. And I think as I've gotten older and just my original path in life was to be, I majored in psychology and statistics and pre-med so that I could go work for the CIA to be a criminal profiler.
Wow.
And I've always enjoyed psychology and I've always been the, like, again, the best friend who I, you know, I've heard lots and lots of stories. And so I say this only to mean that it's given me a lot of perspective on, from an early age, how complicated people are with their feelings. And that truthfully, a lot of the crap that we're going through is more just that we don't talk. Like, if you just say how you feel about things, so much more would be done.
Yeah.
So what does that have to do with nature? I think I realize that, like, it is the less fucks. Like, when I'm in nature, I do not feel this pull of society or traditionalism or the city or anything. It's just getting back to this primal existence that I think we've been moving away from. And actually why we have a lot of the issues we have today, because we've stopped caring about our young and caring about our old and collectively taking care of each other. It's become so much more about isolation and owning your own stuff and protecting your own.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think for me, nature helps remind me that things are millions of years older than us. And just that is just puts you in perspective about anything, you know, whatever problem I have, my career or bills or whatever, you know, it's just, it you can just exist out there and it's really beautiful.
I agree. How did you go from you wanting to be a criminal profiler to acting? How did that happen?
I auditioned for a musical my junior year of college because I thought you were supposed to try things in college. And I got cast and I met some friends through that and they were like, hey, we're going to go to New York we're going to do these things called straw hat auditions, which are for like summer stock theater. I had no idea what they were talking about. And I was like, well, I like New York, so I'll just go. And I did it and I got the job. I went and did summer stock and I was like, huh, this is, you can get paid to do this. And this is like fun. Like, I will say that I was always a hard worker in school and whatnot, but I also always liked to party hard too. So it was, theater was kind of like adult summer camp, summer stock. And I was like, this is incredible. So instead of graduating when I could have my junior year, I went back for my senior year and I took only theater classes. And I made some really good relationships with my professors. And I think being able to come at it almost with an analytical brain really set me up to move forward in this business, because I was coming into it so late, I really just knew that everybody else knew more than me. And so I watched and learned and respected the people who I got to work with.
Cool. And it sounds like you've done a ton of voiceover work. Is that true?
Yeah, I've been pretty lucky on that. I was fortunate enough, I met some friends in New York who had done shows like Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh! And I grew up loving those and I wanted to do them too. And they're like, we got them because of our friend Erica. She's our coach. And I'm like, well, I want a voiceover coach then too. So I met with her and she was like, I will take you on. And I was just very fortunate. I booked my first job 3 months after starting with her.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And it's opened up doors that I didn't think I would ever have. And like random surprises, like Squid Game, like that was not anything I thought would blow up into the worldwide phenomenon that it did. So just to be a little part of it was kind of cool.
So tell us what was that project? What did you do for that show?
Squid Game, I did the English voice of player 111, who is the surgeon who, when players die, he cuts out their organs and helps the people sell them off.
I think Cassidy just binged that whole show, binged a version.
Well, I just binged, full disclosure, I just binged the reality show version where they made a live game show based on it.
I also recently binged that and found it extremely compelling at times. It was beautiful.
I wanted to turn it off because it was awful, and then I couldn't because it was so compelling.
Yeah.
And we ended up watching all 10 episodes in like a day and a half.
Wait, you guys have to help me. What is the, I don't understand. There's two shows.
Okay, so Squid Games is a fictional show about a very dystopian, big crazy game show where they play children's games, but in gigantic form, and they're fatal when they lose.
Okay.
And they die and they get shot and they,
okay,
all kinds of bad things happen. And the winner wins 4 million won,
mm-hmm,
which is Korean money. But they made but here's the funny part is you have a show that is, you know, when you do a dystopian show, the point is it's like, don't do this. It's a bad thing.
Right.
It's dystopian. We're showing you this so that you will see how awful it is.
Clearly.
Yeah.
And then they turn around and go, great, that was really well done. Let's make that. And so they actually made a Squid Games. It's just not fatal.
Oh, so it's the same games that you just don't die?
Yes.
Basically, and they changed it enough because otherwise people would know what was coming, and knowing what was coming is part of it, because they all live together in a big dorm and they, you know, form alliances. And even though they know only one person can win, but to get farther at all, you know, you gotta, because you're picking teams, and there's things where you knock people out with different like weird challenges where you get to pick one person to eliminate, but only if you tell your friend. That it's awful.
Yeah.
It's the worst of what we, of like, how do we manipulate ourselves and sell ourselves on ideas of like destroying people's lives.
Right. Fun.
I think the hardest thing to watch for me in that series is when you get to the marble game, which is essentially the idea is you're paired off and then only one of you moves on. So if there's like,
you know, 50% of the people are going to be gone after this.
And in the TV show, you know, obviously it's fictional, but you care about these people's storylines. But in the real show, it's real, but you also care about their story, because obviously everyone could use $4.5 million. Like, that's life-changing money.
Right.
For anybody that's on that game show. And so
right.
they're all deserving of it. And they all, the sad thing is that none of them thought that this game that they, or this quote unquote picnic that they were going to go on was going to have a catch. So they all paired off with their friends. Mm. Sorry, spoiler alert also. They pair off with their friends. So you know that these conversations are going to come down to like, fuck, like you're my closest friend in this show right now. We've suffered through this. And now I have to take you out.
Yeah. They pitted all the best friends against each other.
And kill your dream at getting $4.5 million.
Jeez.
Yeah.
And they made them have to pick their own game, meaning it's a marble game.
Yeah.
You have to, in the next 30 minutes, you have to have decided on the rules of a game and one of you has to be the winner. If you haven't done that, you're both out.
Both dead?
Just out. You're both out of the game. You both lose. So, you know, first they have to agree on the rules of a game and then they have to play it and then one of them has to leave.
What do you guys think for yourselves personally, both of you? Is there a game you would ever play if your life was on the line? Like, what would the stakes have to be that you'd play it?
Wait.
Like, how much money would someone have to offer you, or is it money?
Oh, but it was like, I'll either win $4 million or I will die?
Yeah. Like, is there a game you'd ever play?
No.
I don't think so.
It's called life.
Right. I think it would more determine, be dependent upon what actual kind of world we live in. Like, I'm okay right now living in this world. It might be a little fucked up at times, but I'm okay not risking my life right now for money of any sort.
I see what you're saying. But if it got worse.
In 2 years from now, who knows? Yeah. I mean.
Right.
It's not looking good right now.
It's really not. It all depends on the context is what you're saying.
Yeah, I feel like that's a thing for like people with families. They would, they're more likely like kids or, you know, I have to provide. So at least I'll leave them something, you know, whereas me, it's like, well, if I lose, I'm dead. Well, then I'm doing okay right now. Right.
Who will take care of my dog? Gotta stay around for her.
And my dog can't spend the money. How about you, Katie? Would you?
I'm trying to think what the stakes would have to be to get me to enter that. I think it would depend on what the game is and how likely I thought I could win.
Yeah.
What if it's a 70-30 chance? You 70% are going to win whatever the game is.
Ooh, or die?
Person who can hit the highest note, like in Privilege to Pee. You know, that's you, is my point. But maybe the other person might be able to hit higher.
Yeah, and what do I win? If I win.
$4 million. $4.5 million.
Yeah, see, I think it needs to be higher.
Really? Would $1 billion make that worth it?
No, but maybe.
I'll tell you, when I've bought tickets for like the $1 billion super lotto, I actually got nervous. I was like, I'd really rather win 10 million.
Right?
Why?
$1 billion is terrifying.
Well, they have steps for you in case you win. People have outlined what you should do so that you don't, you know.
That's true. So you don't blow through it.
Yeah.
It's not so much blowing through it as like now I have a target on my back. I'm a billionaire.
It's why they tell you disappear for 6 months until everything has died down and then go in.
That's what I would do.
But also I would feel like I had to give most of it away to something, but I wouldn't know what to give it to. Like this World Wildlife Fund. I don't fucking know. Whereas 10 million, I feel like I'll give some to my parents, pay their house off, pay those person's house off, give $100,000 to my best friend, whatever, you know. And then I'd still have living left over.
And see, that's why billionaires are so messed. They just don't know what to do with their
that's
money.
That's the problem.
That's the problem.
We should feel sorry because
let's help them. Yeah.
I mean, I would have no fucking problem receiving $1 billion.
Really?
No problem at all. I'd do whatever I had to do. No problem. I'd do whatever I have to do to survive and get people to forget about me. And then I'd start giving, I'd solve all my own problems. Then I'd solve everybody else. Then I'd start solving everybody else's problems. It's pretty simple. Solve your own, take care of you. And then like, take care of all your friends and then look at the world. Okay. A little bit to wildlife.
Yeah. Like how much would you sock away for you before you start burning it out? I'd be like 50 million.
I was going to say 100 million.
I don't need that. I mean, 50 million, you are done. You don't have to do shit for the rest of your life. You can pay every bill.
Yeah. You can live off of all that interest.
Well, how much taxes are we paying on $1 billion for the lottery winning?
Okay. So you walk away with 500 million.
Is that how much?
It's pretty much 50%.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah.
But 500 million's a lot.
Eh. That's right. You could do a lot of good.
Yes, you could.
That'd be fine. I'd be fine. I'd have a fun time actually figuring out how much to give to whom.
Oh, well, I would love to be part of that plan. So
I'll call you. I'll call you when I win.
Every one of our guests. No, only the ones we like, because there's like 10 that we don't like. You decide who they are.
Perfect. I love it.
Hey, what's up? It's Rami. I am walking in Louisville, Kentucky. They're really good about their historic signage here. They have everything from this famous jug band leader ate a sandwich over here, you know, or F. Scott Fitzgerald dropped his hat on this corner, or this parking lot you're standing on was the site of a slave pen that exported this many thousands of humans every year downriver further south. They kept them chained up because we are so close to the Ohio River and therefore so close to freedom. The other side of the Ohio was a free state, Indiana. Anyway, there's a lot of ghosts in this town. There's like apparently major Native American burial ground action around here. And then the slave trade. Oh, and they have underground tunnels here, which I have not gotten to see yet. I want to do like a tour. I don't know the original purpose of them, maybe something to do with bourbon. But anyway, the underground tunnels were used for the Underground Railroad. Isn't that cool? They were also used during Prohibition. So I'm going to find out the initial reason for the underground tunnels, but I bet it has to do with bourbon, because you know what? Everything here has to do with bourbon. Rami's rules.
Well, we don't have a ton of time left, BKM. But do you have any questions you want to ask in the Akashic Records?
Is that of interest?
I mean, I would love to go on that journey with you. I, full disclosure, I had no idea what that was until maybe 30 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And I was like, because usually people are like, let me make your star chart for you. I just need to know what time you were born at this and then. I'm like, I don't know. None of that's given to me from Korea. So.
Oh, shit. Right. You can't run his human design.
Yeah. So, but
Akashic Records,
if there is a way to tap into anything of the past, I'm very curious.
So here's how this works. I would take us all through a short meditation, and then you'd hear me say your name in this Akashic Records prayer. It's sort of like a statement of intention to connect with it. It's me energetically connecting with your soul and your soul's connection to the all that is, or God, or the divine, or consciousness, or whatever word you like. Once I'm in the space of connecting with the Akashic Records, which are, the word Akasha just means realm of God. And the records are a space within the realm of God where the entire history of your soul is recorded theoretically. But the way I sort of relate to it is like, it's just a high vibrational place or realm or state of being, the records. So from the records, we can do a lot of energy healing. I can transmit light. We can heal stuff for you, and we can ask any question and get answers. So what helps me when I go in the records with someone is for you to have some very specific questions in mind. So do you, excuse my burps, have anything you'd like to ask?
I mean,
maybe things like you don't have answers to.
Yeah.
Through your normal.
I mean, I'm always curious as an adoptee about my past and just what any type of info you can gain from that. I have my own theories in life. You know, DNA testing and whatnot have helped me narrow it down that I may have a celebrity father, but I'll never know until, you know, I can get a little more questions done. But yeah.
So what was the DNA work you did?
So I, for a long, 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 long time, I mean, my whole life, I just assumed I was Korean 100%. And some people didn't think I was fully Korean, and I didn't know. And when I got the DNA back, I was a mix. I am majority South Korean, and my I also have some Japanese in me, which would make sense because of the imperialism. But what I was shocked by was I'm like over almost over a third Chinese, and which goes in line with my potential father that I may have somewhere out there.
How did you find out about your potential father?
I've been confused with this celebrity many a times in my life. And I actually later learned that, you know, they had many, many extramarital affairs or even just premarital relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And with women in South Korea, including one he or may not have been in love with. So again, all of this is hearsay through rumor, you know, as much as I can pick up from other people who have more knowledge. All I've really taken away from it is that every time I try to say, no, that's not possible, the universe gives me like, oh, but it could be.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's never shut the door on it.
Okay. What is your full legal name? The name on your driver's license?
Brian Thomas Chan McCormick.
Oh boy. Hold on. Thomas Chan. Okay. I think I got it. I want to warn both of you. I have about 15 minutes in me.
Okay.
I've had a very long day. And so let's get in the records. We'll spend 15 minutes. We'll ask whatever you want. And then I have to pass out.
Okay. I appreciate this. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, my pleasure. Yeah, I'm sorry I don't have more bandwidth tonight. All right. So I'm going to take us through the shortest of meditations, 2 minutes. Yeah. We'll have our eyes closed, maybe three. And then you'll hear me say your name inside the Akashic Records prayer. Once the records are open, I'll let you know that they're open. Yeah, I'm going to turn my camera off so I can also turn this light off. It's so bright.
Mm.
And then once the records are open, I'll let you know that they're open, Brian. And then I'll say that now's the time to feel free to start asking your questions. And then, you know, if the question is a little too vague or too general, I'll just help you. I'll just tell you that you can interrupt at any time. You can ask anything you want. You're not going to mess it up or anything. So, yeah, if you're ready, let's dive in.
Let's try it.
All right. So we'll close our eyes. And we'll all start to take a couple deep breaths into the low belly. Using our musical theater training, fill that low belly with air like a balloon that fills as we inhale. And just anchoring ourselves into the base of the body, connecting down with the pelvic floor, below the belly button. And just starting to allow our bodies to sit heavily in the seat that we're in. Dropping your body like a sack of rice or a bag of potatoes heavily into your chair. Giving over the need to hold your body up. We're going to give that job straight over to the chair itself. And as we fully sink the full weight of our bodies into the chair, and continue to breathe low and slow in the belly. Inhaling and expanding the low belly, exhaling, allowing the low belly to collapse gently with no stress, strain, or effort, just a gentle relaxing, allowing. We're going to come into contact with the bottoms of our feet, merging into connecting with the bottoms of each toe, feeling them in contact with the sock or the shoe or the floor below us. We're gonna feel the bottoms of each toe touching what's below them, the balls of each foot touching what's below them, the heels of the feet touching what's below them. And as we stay in contact with the bottoms of each foot, we're just gonna allow our shoulders to drop just a little further down and our throats to soften and open. And the jaw, the low jaw, to drop away from the upper jaw. Any tension in the teeth, the cheekbones, or the eyes, we'll just consciously choose to loosen and let go of that. And as we bring our attention back to the bottoms of the feet, we're just going to visualize a little spinning foot chakra that starts to spin open at the bottom center of each foot, like a little tornado of light that gets wider and wider and wider at the bottom center of each foot until the entire surface area of the bottom of each foot is like an open window, an open plane of light. And we're just going to acknowledge or choose to believe for this moment that opening the windows at the bottom of the feet just allows the huge and vast aura of you and your body to commune and connect more directly with the huge and vast aura of the earth. And as this occurs, the bigness of you communing with the bigness of her through the open windows of our feet, we're just going to visualize or imagine that 500 tree roots made of light begin to extend through the open window of each of our feet, down and into the earth. Hundreds of miles down and in, 500 tree roots of light extend through the left foot down into the earth. And 500 tree roots of light extend down into the earth through the open window of our right foot. So that 1,000 tree roots of light are anchoring down and in and down and in. And as those 1,000 roots anchor deeper and deeper into the earth, the last step here is we're going to visualize that everything from our feet to the head, the body, becomes a very tall, very wide tree of conscious light. It's a tree of awareness. And this is the being that each of us is. Each of us exists in this conscious field as a big conscious tree of light, metaphorically speaking. And we're going to imagine and or visualize that this tree starts to expand left and right, forward and back, and upwards into the heavens. So wide and so deep and so tall that eventually we can't even see the edges of the tree or the top of the tree. We expand infinitely left and right, forward and back, and upwards as our roots drop as deeply as possible into the core of the earth. Such that we've become an open vehicle, a receptive, spacious vehicle of light that is also rooted to the here and now, sort of paradoxically. Okay. And from here, we do acknowledge the forces of light, asking for guidance, direction, and courage to know the truth as it is revealed for our highest good and the highest good of everyone connected to us. Holy Spirit of divine light, protect me, please, from all forms of self-centeredness. And direct my attention to the work at hand. Help me to know Brian Thomas Chan McCormick in the light of the Akashic Records. Help me to see Brian Thomas Chan McCormick through the eyes of the Lords of the Records. And enable me, please, to share the wisdom and compassion that the Masters, Teachers, and loved ones of Brian Thomas Chan McCormick have for him. And I'm going to go quiet for just a moment here. And as we're deepening into the Akashic Records of Brian Thomas Chan McCormick, I'm just asking that we clear, release, uncreate, destroy anything and everything for Brian in his field or mine that would stand in the way of us receiving highest and best guidance, direction, clarity, truth, insight, etc., for his highest good. And anything that would stand in the way of us receiving any energies for healing that he requires. Okay, Brian, so how would you frame the question you have about your dad? I could ask my own version, but I'd love for you to frame it for us.
Is my father Chinese?
I don't get a yes on that. No. Is it that he's not fully Chinese? Yes. Is he somewhat Chinese? Yes. Okay. Do you have, Brian, a theory about another ethnic background he might have?
I don't, but I would be curious then if you sense my mother being Korean.
That's a big fat yes. Fully Korean, it looks like, or like very, very largely so. But then they correct me. They go, no, fully. Fully Korean. Dad, let's see, what percentage Chinese is Brian's dad? 30%. Okay. Talking about bio dad here. Yeah. All right. And so is the actor you mentioned a few moments ago like fully Chinese?
I believe so.
Are you sure?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, because I get a no. Do you want to just ask if it's that guy? What's that?
We could try.
Okay.
Do you want us to beep it out if we do? Or are you
Yeah, I would. Yes, I would appreciate that.
Yeah, we can totally do that.
So you can have, you can say the name and then we'll just beep it out in the production.
Great. Is my dad.
Okay. Before we get into this, mm-hmm. I want to ask you if you're sure that you really want to go into this, because sometimes when you have a question like this for a long time, mm-hmm. it could be equally upsetting to hear either side, like either way it goes.
Yeah.
You could be disappointed, or you could be so excited, or you could be scared by the information. Like, is this definitely something you want to talk about now?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let me sit with this. All right. So I just get a no, like, immediately. Yeah, I don't think there's any connection, but I, birth-wise,
mm-hmm.
The reason you're getting the thing where the universe goes, yeah, but it's possible, is more about a sense, it's more about connecting you with the sense of possibility for what's out there for you. Creatively, professionally, like, you can do anything you want.
Yeah.
Is what the, and we'll bleep it again, message is. When this yeah. person shows up, or people who point you in that direction, it's like, you can look at this person's life. Look what he created. Look what he had. Look what he received. You're capable of this.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's something about the character and the figure that he has been in the world that is emulatable for you,
mm-hmm.
which is to say, there was a kind of playfulness mixed with a kind of badassery,
mm-hmm.
mixed with a fortitude and a strength and a determination and a stick-to-itiveness and a never giving up and a, you know, devil may care, like, so many qualities.
Yeah.
That this person, so we don't have to bleep it again, embodied
mm-hmm.
professionally, that are frequencies for you to look to. Specifically, the ones that stand out the most as being most relevant at this moment for you are kind of like the giving, like we talked about before, the giving no fucks piece, and the
mm-hmm.
almost like, if you can dream it, you can do it kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And the sort of just going for it-ness,
mm-hmm.
and the believing in the vision. It's not even believing in yourself, it's believing in what comes through you. You know, that sense of like, an idea comes and you're like, well, that's one of a million ideas. Should I believe it? Should I lean in? How do I trust it? And they're like, if it comes through you and it inspires and awakens you, you could trust it and you can lean in. Yeah. Do you want to ask anything else or anything different about your bio dad, or anything at all about any of this?
Yeah, I would love to ask if my bio mom is still alive.
Okay. I get a yes immediately. Big one. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, let me just sit with this energy. I think she's older and not doing super great. Like, she's not too long for this world, but yes, she's alive. When I connect with her energy, there's sort of a lot going on in her body that's kind of dense. She also feels a little frail. She's like frail on the outside, dense on the inside. There's a lot of, it's interesting. There's a lot of, like, you know, sometimes, how do I say? Sometimes the sassiest people live forever, you know, sometimes
longer,
like the meanest people on earth, like, live to be 120. She's not that per se, but she's got it's something like that. Like, she's sure. pickled. She's a little like cranky. Mm. And her crankiness keeps her around.
Does she want to be found?
Yes. She would like it very much. Yeah, it would do her heart good at this time in her life. I'm not sure she knows she's not doing that great. She knows she's getting older and she knows she feels weaker, but I don't think she knows about some of the stuff going on inside the body. Anyway, she does want to be found. Your dad wouldn't mind it either, by the way. It's a different energy. It's really different. He's more like, he's funny. He's more like a character, a cad, a sass master. Yeah, sure. Come over here, kid. He's kind of like that. They're pretty different from each other. His energy is very big. Hers is a little smaller. But yeah, he wouldn't mind it. He has a real kind of like, yeah, sure, why not? That'd be cool vibe. And
Brian, can I ask the circumstances of your adoption? I'm just...
Sure. There's nothing known. As far as my paperwork goes, I was adopted at 3 months old and...
From Korea?
Yeah. And mother refused to give her name and the father's name. But also, a lot of the time, that type of paperwork is forged just for the families that are getting the baby in America so that it feels like it's a like legitimate thing. Because the adoptions that happened in the 80s were mainly to help get Korea out of the war debt that had happened. So babies were actually their biggest export during the 70s and the 80s. And our paperwork is very hard to, you know, find and track because the government has a lot of shame in what happened. And I guess they feel that by not acknowledging us, it's easier to deal with. So there is legislation that's changing and there are people fighting to get more of our history back to us. But it is a battle right now.
Mm.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing that.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. Yeah. What else? Any other questions?
Can you point towards any type of direction for either?
What do you mean?
Or how to go about, do they, are they trying to find me, I guess, too?
Okay. That's like a no. And there's a sense of, respect about it. There's like a sense of, for the mom, she's been on a ride about it, up, down, right, wrong, should I, shouldn't I, don't want to bother, don't want to, da, da, da. And then there's just like a landing on, well, out of respect, I won't insinuate myself into his life. That's where the not looking comes from for her, which is why she'd be happy to be found, but I don't think she's pursuing it on her end. He's not, for different reasons. In terms of how to go about it, why do they just immediately say no? So let me just pursue that for a second though. No, you can't tell me no. No, what is the no here? Does he already know what to do? Yes. Does he need help? No. Will they be hard to find? A little bit. Will it be a wild goose chase? No. Will he be able to find them? Yes. Well, all I can say, I don't know what this no is, but is it in your highest good to pursue finding them? Yes. Can you find them? Yes. Will you be successful in finding them? Yes. One thing I get clearly is just follow your intuition. Like, get online, hunt around, ask all the adoption agencies in all the places. Like, just do what makes sense and you'll come to it. I think part of the journey, is that true? Yeah. Part of the journey of finding them is kind of part of the whole point of it for you. Is that why there's a yes? Okay. I mean, a no. Yeah, because they'll often give me some really specific stuff, but they're like hard no on this, me helping us getting intel. Hmm. I think they're like, he knows what to do. Do you feel like a sense of you know what to do? Or you have some ideas?
Yes, I do have steps that I have procrastinated on. So
okay.
I can follow that.
Yeah, that's they're like, you're right on about that. All the steps you're wanting to follow are good ones. All right. Anything else? Maybe one more quickie?
No, I think that's good. Thank you.
Okay. No problem. All right. Let me close your records. Give me just a moment. I want to thank the masters, teachers, and loved ones for their love and compassion, the lords of the records for their point of view, and the Holy Spirit of Light for all knowledge and healing. I ask that you return all of Brian Thomas Chan McCormick's energy to himself. I ask that you return him to his complete human wholeness. The divine portal, the Akashic Records of Brian Thomas Chan McCormick are now closed. Amen. The divine portal and the Akashic Records of Brian Thomas Chan McCormick are now closed. The divine portal and the Akashic Records of Brian Thomas Chan McCormick are now closed. Amen. Amen. Well, this has been a delight and a pleasure. And thank you for being here. I hope that was helpful.
Thank you. Same. I loved it.
I'm good.
It was wonderful. And I love this conversation. I would be happy to do another hour or two with you both.
Yay. That's awesome. Well, we'll have to get you out to Cassidy's beach villa that he apparently lives on now.
It's my fantasy.
I mean, that's yes. That's please.
I'm going to Costa Rica at the end of the week, so I'm getting excited and getting ready.
Thank you. Send us a car.
Totally. All right, Brian. So nice to meet you.
Very nice to meet you both, and I'll see you in 2024.
Yeah. We'll keep an eye on big things are happening for Brian Kim McCormick, y'all.
Sounds good.
Take a look.
Sounds good.
Very exciting.
Thank you.
Do your work, everybody.
Do your work.
Do your work.
Bye.
What are you asking for? All of the answers? Say what? All of the answers? Yeah, all the answers.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @AllAnswersPod, @AllAnswersPod. Thank you.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.